Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Will you do something simple for me? Tell me who you are.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm Dale Hayworth. I teach art history at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota.
Thank you.
And who are you?
Arnie Walker, St. Charles, Illinois.
St. Charles. Where's St. Charles?
40 miles west of Chicago. Yeah, hello.
Hi.
Who are you?
Okay. Are you ready? Plow in. Some of this would have been changed had I'd heard the last conference before this and something that was said this morning by Erling in his session. I got a footnote in here and it ought to be expanded, so this gives you the idea of the state of what you're about to hear. I'm a historian of art. I spent almost all my life, my professional life anyway, studying works of art. And similarly, been involved one way or another with what I identify as my religious life. Therefore, the problem or the possibility of discussing a problem or identifying a problem of a relationship between these two facets of my own life, the religious and the artistic or the aesthetic, maybe we can refine the term later, is a natural one for me. But we can narrow it down even a little bit more. Perhaps for the last 300 years or so, art in the Western world, with which I'm more familiar, has been very strongly dominated by Christian images. So that to ask the question, as I do of myself, of a Christian, what is the relationship between any religious experience I might have, however we define it, and an ascetic experience, however we define it, becomes for me then a pretty important personal question. Now, we're all involved with some elements of the artistic every day. Sitting here and looking at John's screen around the fire, or the texture of the wall, or the fabric that's hanging on the wall back there, or the degree or the condition or the quality of the light that's coming streaming in here, or the sound of my voice. All of us are tremendously aware, sensorily, of our surroundings all the time. We can't escape from being bombarded aesthetically, touched in some artistic way. You just can't do it. You can't walk from here to the dining hall when the bell rings in about 40 minutes or 45 and not be somehow or other touched by an aesthetic awareness. Also every day, I suspect we're all involved with some experience of the religious dimension. An active participation simply in being alive in God's world would seem to me that make us aware of our friends and ourselves and Him. And I believe we can discover some relationship now between these two areas of experience, the aesthetic and the religious, and maybe we hope that this discovery will lead to an enlarging of our understanding of the valuable elements that are found in each of the separate experiences. Now, my understanding of the aesthetic and the religious experiences, there's some remarkable similarities between the elements with which they're put together. So in the remainder of these few pages and then in the discussion to follow, I hope we can identify some of these similarities, primarily in an attempt to illuminate them, because from my own background, as I mentioned in the introductory sentence, I find these perhaps the two most profound parts of my life. Let me give a brief description of the two experiences. Working description, which we can cavil about or debate later. I see the total religious experience or event as an extremely complex form. Perhaps it's made up like an orange with all of its many sections. These sections are the many parts in the total event, such as a relationship between individuals in their Christian concern for each other, or specific liturgical practices or beliefs, or the knowledge that we have of events in Christian historical past. All of these things form the total religious event. But in the center of this little orange, after we've peeled off the skin, taken out the sections, in the center, in the very heart of this orange, there's a small element where all of the sections kind of bow out from to give way to it, make room for it. And it's in this small little section in the center that I'm going to term the religious experience proper. Now, it's very personal. It's all mine. It's nothing that I can share. And I suspect it's at that point that I might say I meet God, although in this morning's conversations with Erling, it dawned on me that it's quite possible that it's at that particular point that the Spirit touches me. I don't know. That's a penciled footnote, so we can find out about that. Now, similarly, when I try to picture or attempt to picture a work of art for you, I see this as another orange formed in the same way, with a lot of sections, and these sections are comprised of Rich Kemmerer, one section, a painting he just did, another section. It was made out of oil. It was 3 foot by 9. Critics reviewed it and said it was good, bad, or indifferent. How much did it cost? All of these make up a work of art. But in the same manner as the form of that I described the religious experience, I would find in the center of this orange, at the core, where the other sections, these components sort of bow out and give way, there would be what I call the personal aesthetic experience. So when I refer in the rest of this afternoon to the religious and the aesthetic experiences, I'm speaking only of these two little core sections, not the other material, which is important, which is valuable, which is significant, but is not what I'm talking about when I say the religious experience or the aesthetic experience. There are both some general and specific similarities between these experiences. The general point of similarity is that about both we feel a sense of awe or a kind of sense of mystery. Unfortunately, for most of us, we sometimes believe that a study or an analysis of these mysteries and these experiences will somehow lessen or destroy their value for us. I know one of the biggest problems I have in my classes in teaching is to have students examine their own reactions to works of art. They simply don't want to do that because they're afraid if they do, it'll strip away this mystery and they'll lose this sense of awe. And therefore, they're going to lose somehow the glow that they felt with a work of art. I suspect that the problem here is that we have a different concept of mystery. Because it's true, normally we study mysteries, we read them, we get involved with mysteries in order to solve them. But I think that the mystery we speak of concerning the art and the religious one, the aesthetic and the religious experience, this is not a mystery to solve at all. This is simply a mystery to experience and to come in contact with. And the major value of it, I'm going to identify, hopefully, is to be found in the two experiences themselves. It resides right smack in them. That's a major value of the aesthetic or the religious. There's been a lot of questioning in the past 15, 20, 25 years about the nature of God, the nature of man, the nature of art, what is modern art saying to modern man, and so forth. And trying to answer these questions, it soon becomes obvious that we have very little chance of understanding things or events apart from ourselves. That is, it's in our own personal experience or things or events or in our own personal attempts to wrestle with the questions that we find any real sense or any real value. Now, of course, we do examine things in isolation and events in isolation. That's what we're doing right now, as a matter of fact, trying to isolate an element. But we have to remember that although we do enhance our understanding by such analyses, and our religious and experience, and the analyses of our religious and our aesthetic experiences, that these two experiences really have value, not at the time we're doing the analyzing. They don't have any value at our point of separation from the situation. Our religious and aesthetic experiences really have value because of our active participation in the event. Be that event a painting, or a flute, concerto, a sunset, or a hike up the Holden Village, or some event in our religious life. This explains why during a lecture on art, you seldom are going to have an aesthetic experience. But maybe you're being prepared for one. This also explains why when you go to church on Sunday, you very seldom get a religious experience during the sermon. At least I do. This has been a cliche, I guess. But the way I resolve the problem here is that it is a preparation for an experience and not to be the experience itself. Thomas Merton used the term self-realization to describe more fully this value of the experience. Let me read a quote from him. This is in his book, The New Man, published about 15 years ago. Self-realization, in this true religious sense, is then less an awareness of ourselves than an awareness of the God to whom we are drawn in the depths of our own being. We become real and experience our actuality, not when we pause to reflect upon our own self as an isolated individual entity, but rather when, transcending ourselves and passing beyond reflection, we center our whole soul upon the God who is our life. That is to say, we fully realize ourselves when we cease to be conscious of ourselves in separateness, and we know nothing but the one God who is above all knowledge. Now, I do believe that the wonder and the delight with which we greet the aesthetic and the religious experience will be enhanced as our knowledge grows. If not, I'd have a hard time making valid my position as a teacher. Any of us who are in the academic field will. This knowledge will not lessen either our enjoyment of these experiences or the values we gain from them, but in fact it will increase. After all, one of the major reasons for God having given us free will was that we try to understand what makes ourselves tick, to learn something about our actions and ourselves. This identifies a second general similarity between the two experiences, and that is our desire to repeat them, to have it again. This desire comes both from the afterglow and the kind of warm feeling we have had after the experience, and an intellectual awareness that it's proper to try to understand ourselves and these feelings. And that's why when we hear a piece of music, we're familiar with it, we want to hear it again. Well, obviously a painting, I have to talk in the realm of the art more than in the religious experiences. I'm more vocal that way. When you see a painting, we can go back and see it again. If it were a one-time thing, we simply wouldn't want to do that. Let me further define the experiences, be a little more specific, by identifying some characteristics of the religious experience and then try to relate them to the aesthetic experience. I'm using as a definition of the religious experience some of the ideas of William James in a book which is, I don't know when it was published. Fair, anybody have any idea when James published his Varieties of Religious Experience?
98.
We're talking about a book that's 77 years old. This work has been tremendously treasured, mainly because of his insights about the complex subject that I'm talking about. My own background and experience allow me to use some kinds of freedom in my own definition of the aesthetic, but I'm more comfortable using James as a jumping-off point and at least his ideas as a basis for trying to study the relationship between the aesthetic and the religious. He identifies, this is a quote, "The personal religious experience with its root and has its root and its center in a mystical experience." And then there are a number of attributes that James identifies as in this mystical experience. And there are three. One, its quality must be directly experienced. It cannot be imparted. It cannot be transferred to others. Paul Tillich talks about this also. He's very insistent on this notion. He calls it personal participation. Second, this mystical state cannot be sustained very long. And third, the mystic, and that's somewhat unfortunate word since we have connotations now that I guess were not present in James's time, but the mystic, that is the one that is doing the experiencing, feels as if his own will were in abeyance, although some memory of the content of the experience always remains. And again, Tillich refers to his belief that we can't intentionally produce this feeling, the religious. My understanding of the aesthetic experience shows remarkable similarities to these characteristics of James's. For one, the quality of a work of art must be directly and personally experienced. You can go to the eye openers and listen to Rich. But if he's talking about a work of art, apart from his voice or his delivery, he can talk through all of his sabbatical, and you will never for a moment get to experience the quality of the work of art that he's talking about. It must be personally done. Similarly in music, any of the arts. The quality of these works simply will not be understood. That is, it will not be known by you until you directly and personally experience the work itself. Now, an interesting corollary from this is that this came up this morning when people were talking about groups of people involved with the charismatic movements seemingly contacted it from each other, in that it was like an epidemic. A corollary from the fact that the personal experience is a necessary ingredient to art and religion, or aesthetic and religious experience, is that we do not have a religious experience. At least I would interpret Tillich and James and my own experience as saying that we, Nancy and I, we cannot have a religious experience. You can have one, and I can have one, but we cannot have one. And similarly, there's no such thing as a group experience in aesthetics. It's individual. Barbara's got one. Both Barbara's. But neither Barbara nor I can have a group aesthetic experience. The second thing that James mentioned, we can't sustain the experience for very long. I'll give you a simple sentence about this. Very few laboratory experiences or laboratory tests have been able to be applied to try to identify what the aesthetic experience is and who's having it. It would solve Rich's and my problem tremendously if we could identify such a test, because we can go to have the students sign up for Art 101 and plug them in with anodes and push three buttons, and we can see which lights light up, and the first three people in that row, they got A's because of these lights, and we knew where it was coming. The problem is, in laboratory experiences, the only thing we've been able to isolate in the realm of the aesthetic is that it's short, just like that, in and out. That no matter how they measure it or try to measure it, it seems to be absolutely fleeting. It doesn't last for a second, two, or three. And as a possible way of checking this for yourself, think for a moment of any kind of experience you've had, and then think of having it. If the first part of this description holds, that it totally absorbs you, think of that then being totally absorbed for 10 minutes. The physical property probably simply couldn't handle what's going on with all the synapses and whatever is moving around inside of me. Perhaps the third attribute of the religious experience, though, is the most important in its similarity with the aesthetic. That attribute, which James identifies as a feeling that our will is in abeyance. Now, we seem not to be able to will into being either of these experiences. We can go to church on Sunday, or you can go to the service in Vespers tonight, and you can stand in front of our good preacher, and you can just say, okay, who's sermoning tonight? Well, if it were, whoever it is, we can't stand in front of them and say, okay, here I am. Give me a religious experience. I can't will it into being, and I can't stand in front of a painting or listen to Jerry play the organ and consciously say, all right, the next 12 minutes I'm going to have a religious experience. We seem not to be able to have that possibility. It seems simply that we can't have them on demand, either of these experiences. It's certainly on God's initiative that we experience Him. And it's upon a combination of a host of things, physical characteristics mostly, that we're able to have an experience which we call the aesthetic. The last part of James's third attribute, memory, also is pertinent in identifying the relationship between the two experiences, because we always seem to talk about them in the past tense. That is, I'm aware of having had the experience I just had, call it religious, or I'm aware of having had the aesthetic experience. I wasn't aware of having it at the time. I'm only aware of having had it. Past tense. Let me return for a moment to the attribute concerning the abeyance of the will, for there seems to exist here a little paradox. The paradox exists when I identified that we cannot will into being either of the two experiences, but I also said that we have to participate actively and individually in the experience, and there is a kind of seeming paradox here. Let me resolve it by talking about a church service that is perhaps more typical than not for most of us. In most services, we frequently sing hymns that are very familiar and some that are very unfamiliar. During the singing of the most familiar hymn, some of us are probably tuned out. That is, the hymn is simply too familiar. 150, for example. I suspect a lot of people kind of groan when 150 is announced on the board. We're too comfortable, and it's too easy, and it's just difficult for us actively to participate in it because of its familiarity. We seem to need for active participation something new. Active participation seems to mean for us, for a moment, for some of us, to get out of ourselves for a moment and touch something new. It's possible, therefore, that for some of us, the singing of a very old familiar hymn, we didn't reach out beyond ourselves, and we were not very actively involved. On the other hand, in the singing of an unfamiliar hymn, or the first singing of a new hymn, we also might be tuned out, but for a different reason. The melody or the words are so strange to us that we have no real way of relating them to us. Or if the hymn would seem to have been what we would normally consider inappropriate. This obviously doesn't account for Holden, but in some churches, if you sing Joy to the World on July the 9th, you have done something inappropriate. There's a lack of relationship between our expectations based on our past experience and this intruding hymn. Now, in all of these examples, we might have sung along, but we did not actively participate. And therefore, what I'm saying here is that in order for us to have a religious experience or an ascetic experience, we must not only actively participate in it when it arrives, and perhaps this is of equal value, we must help its arrival by setting the stage for its coming, by reaching out beyond our everyday concerns and by being a little bold. C.S. Lewis, in his little Mere Christianity book, although he was writing specifically to the proposition of choosing to be a Christian, he voiced this notion when he wrote, "Today, this moment, is our chance to choose the right side. God's holding back to give us a chance, and it won't last forever. Right now, we better take it or leave it." So, if you were able to get something in the way of a definition or need some clarification for a discussion to elaborate on the theme of the religious and the ascetic.
You would agree that it's possible, though, to increase the possibility of the religious experience happening, which is maybe sort of why we come to church.
Sure, sure. We can increase the possibility of an aesthetic experience happening. One way frequently of zeroing in on definitions that we can then take off on to try to relate is to find out what these things are not, or what are their problems, what impedes them. I have great difficulty, both at churches and in museums, when I'm surrounded by little urchins. When Cookie and I came into church last night, I have to sit fairly close because I cannot hear too well over a PA system. I got mushy ears, and therefore I try to sit up close enough to hear the speaker aside from the PA system. At the same time, up close there were about four or five or six or seven little urchins, and one of them dropped the book in the middle of a great statement that Carol was making, and I didn't get the statement, and therefore did I not get the religious experience upon which it might be based. Could be. Or you go to a museum, and what do you see posted on all the walls? Don't run. Well, you don't see don't run, don't shout, but you got a guard that's telling you, quiet. No debate in front of that painting. Shh, quiet. You got to be quiet. Or when you go to hear a concert, you don't sit around and talk to your friend, and if he's chewing popcorn, it irritates you. These are things that inhibit those experiences that we want to have from coming to the surface, and certainly we can create ways or manners or avenues to increase the possibility of having both of these experiences.
another thing that may inhibit them is that we expect that where they are going to happen is in churches and in museums and nowhere else.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I threw, I think, only one word in to indicate that maybe aesthetic is not restricted to art.
Yeah, you did cover that.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I would hope that such a definition of aesthetic and religious would identify that we're not talking about art and church.
Oh, no.
Right? Okay.
Getting back to what we were talking about last hour, this idea that the religious experience or the aesthetic experience is not a we thing at all, but it's very personal.
Yeah.
Isn't that a pretty recent idea, or do you think all throughout history, even in the most communal societies, that has been true?
Oh, I think it's true. I have a hard time figuring my man climbing into Fontagome or Lascaux climbing back in a wall and painting and not just getting a nice little tingle when that brush defined a line that turned out to be the back of a bison that he was going to hunt tomorrow. On the other hand, what's happened here, and your question relates to this, is that we have put a premium on that today. The aesthetic, we're on an aesthetic binge and have been for a great number of years in our society, that is the Western world society, so that kernel, that orange, is probably kind of malformed in one sense. It's huge, that the thing on the inside. We value it very highly. That's true. And the caveman didn't have that value on it. It was there, and it was valuable, but it wasn't that big. It changed its proportion over the centuries.
Could I? I'm having difficulty with just the one word, religious.
Yeah.
And we got to give a word to it. And so I know what you picked a word, and now you've got a definition, and I understand that. But it seems to me that so far all the terms that or definitions that we have for the religious experience is really a corporate thing. And I'm wondering, is for me a more comparable thing to aesthetic is spiritual. Because as soon as we get in the realm of religion, we are talking about a thing that happens corporately.
What you're trying to do is find another term to handle the same characteristics with.
It was like you said, now keep remembering when I use this word religion that I'm talking about this little kernel at the core.
Yeah.
And I'm having trouble doing that.
Well, we don't. See, we don't function that way. We don't normally, our lives aren't parceled out in sections that way. They slop over into everything. And I guess what I really have is a didactic image. Not an image of reality with that orange.
Yeah.
But in order to understand the functioning and the value and the roles played by these parts, then I create, as Picasso said, I create a lie in order to reveal truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. And this is why I'm very hesitant to use the word religious. I guess because I'm kind of a neophyte anyway, so I'm a little uncomfortable. So I'll buy the problem you have. I don't know what else in my own experience to do with it. But spiritual might have connotations that would blow it all out of sight.
You see, it's just in the same amount of trouble. It's just like that. If I'm painting, I can see how those little kernels or those little pits, at the center are at times happening at the same time.
The two?
Yeah, that they're simultaneous.
And that's interesting. I would have a debate about this, maybe.
Yeah.
But the way I resolved the debate was by having heard Erling this morning. It's the first time it dawned on me that I could have these come together.
Yeah.
Identify the religious experience, identify these similarities as making the two tracks or the two experiences parallel. Mm-hmm. The only book that's tried to discuss this is now also about a 12, 15-year-old book by John Dixon, Nature and Grace in Art. He talks about them coinciding at one point, and I didn't quite understand where he meant, but I always objected to that. But it's quite possible they might coincide at the presence of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Now, this would still be personal for me, though, Rich.
Oh, it would be very personal for me, but that's why I say it. For me, I wouldn't use then the word religious. I would use the word spiritual, which is this kind of one-on-one deal that I've got.
Yeah, okay. Because actually, when I'm talking about aesthetic, you've picked out a fallacy in my image. When I talk about the aesthetic and religious experience, I talked about the religious experience as being a whole ball of wax, but I'm only going to talk about that whole orange, and I'm only talking about that little thing in the middle. But when I talked about the aesthetic, I labeled that the little thing
that's
in the middle. The rest of it is the work of art.
Yes.
Okay.
So I was just looking for a way of distinguishing between
that is good. I had a folly simile, or folly pair of images. Talk about the aesthetic and religious experience. I talked about the religious experience as being that whole ball of wax, but I'm only going to talk about that whole orange, and I'm only talking about that little thing in the middle. But when I talked about the aesthetic, I labeled that the little thing
that's
in the middle. The rest of it is the work of art.
Yes.
Okay.
So I was just looking for a way of distinguishing between
that is good. I had a folly simile, or folly pair of images.
I'm having fun this summer with a quote that I found in Time magazine on the cover article of the Russian ballet dancer Baryshnikov, or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
And he said the essence of art is the pleasure in giving pleasure.
The pleasure in giving pleasure.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice, and I think that's a value of art.
That's great, but that ain't art.
She was quotable.
Yeah, I would say that's not the... He's not at that point... He's talking about another facet of art. He's talking about that.
One of those segments.
Yeah. Although that segment did touch the aesthetic that he wants to create, that the other person will get. Yeah. But
it had interesting implications in terms of recent trends in, for example, attitude toward communion. We used to have a very penitential and very somber distribution.
As opposed to celebration?
As opposed to celebration.
Yeah.
It had a very interesting relationship. At least
Nancy, you're frowning.
Yeah, there's some thoughts in my mind about placing the two ones in the same places in our lives. You know, we have these two oranges, we have these two cores.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in me and living through the course of my life, I almost because the aesthetic thing is adds value to my life, adds a pleasure and a value and a quality to it.
Yes.
When we talk about those two standing, say side by side, or being so similar and yet so different, it makes them almost a luxury, almost a non-being, but yet quality, yet adding the quality, and I don't like to put them on the same level. But because the religious experience, I think when we talk about it has to be talked about where do these two things play, where are they in our own personal lives, you know, and they're in two completely different places.
I'm not so sure they are. I won't buy that.
You don't buy that they're separate?
No, I won't. I think the dividing line between the two is so thin that it is.
Is there a thin dividing line between the two?
No, I don't think. I mean, it seems to me that, you prepare for worship. Well, one way to prepare for whatever this experience is, as for me, it's like a religious experience comes at it this way, and an aesthetic experience comes this way, and you sort of end up with the same sense of wonder, of awe.
I think the content is different, but I think the experience is very, very similar. I was going to ask you, what are the differences between the two, if you had identified any of those? Because I can't come up with one other than that for the religious experience, it's much more transcendent in terms of content and mystery than...
I've created a problem for you, which Rich has helped resolve in me, by the term. I would not allow content. Would you give me another word for content? But when you say content...
Okay, the sections of your oranges.
Okay. See, I would not allow those to be included one whit
in
either of the experiences. Right. Not one whit.
Then I don't see any differences between the experiences.
No, you're saying...
differences in content. I find it very important to have to say that. There's differences in value and in meaning terms of priorities.
Yeah, all right. What if we're then saying they come together and they are not? What is at that point? What is at that core?
Of the experience?
Yeah. I mean, where are you? You found them to be identical. What's there?
I haven't analyzed it experientially, and that's what I have to do. I'm just using my head at this point.
Yeah, part, yeah. But I think part of the answer is going to be you. Maybe all, I don't know. But part of it's going to be you, right? That you're going to be that little pit, pardon the expression. but again, see, I would not allow... If we allow other factors that you have mentioned, these other segments, to be involved with our definition of this experience, which Rich wants helpfully to call spiritual, and the other one I call aesthetic. If you want other factors to be involved with it, then we're going to, and these other factors include the price. It cost me $12 bucks to pay gas to get to church today, because I live far away. And that was part of the total experience of going to church. Now, if I include that $12 as part of the religious experience, that spiritual one, then I'm obligated, the minute I say that, I say, wow, my friend lives across the street. Cost him $12.50. He had a bigger experience, a better experience. No, he didn't. He just spent more money on it. But that's why I have to keep these elements out of my discussion or attempt to identify what that kernel is. But the kernels might be a problem here. Also, I think one of the problems is we're talking, for one, with words, and we're trying to construct a 3D image that we can touch. But we're talking about something that you can't do either with. You cannot touch the religious or the aesthetic experience. You know, I can't weigh it, I can't smell it. It doesn't approach me in that way.
I guess I have a thing that Larry and I have been kicking around all week, and which kind of runs head on into your C.S. Lewis quote at the end. And I see a difference maybe between the religious or the spiritual experience and the aesthetic one, to the extent that I think the aesthetic is received and that the arena can be established for its reception to a great extent by how we prepare. Whereas the spiritual, I think, is sent very often in spite of the arena that we establish for it. In other words, I think, and I'm, once again, I'm operating with the kind of thing that you've set up, which is kind of exciting, and I'd just really like to bow in on that. But I really think the core business, it was part of the gospel that Anne read last night. No man calls Jesus Lord but by the Spirit. And that, to me, implies that experience is one which is, if not totally, I don't know how that operates really, but certainly to the greatest extent dependent upon the sender, whereas the other one seems to be maybe half and half, or maybe even more, upon where I come from and how I prepare on the recipient.
I think you have to prepare to have a religious experience. You have to be open to having one. I think you do. You know, God may come to you, but you won't realize it unless you're open to it.
Yeah, and Bill was right on. St. Paul got knocked right off his horse. He didn't plan it.
Rich, are you saying that
the spiritual experience is less controllable than the aesthetic? Is that what you mean? That if you can put it in
that's my problem that I've got with these two pits, because I see them so, you know, I don't got two oranges. I'm sitting there
okay.
painting my painting, you know, and all of a sudden I don't even know what's happening, and I am
knocked off your ego.
I'm translated, you know. I am somewhere that I have no intention of being when I sit down there. Now, what was that? My paint? You know, that did that to me? Yeah. I mean, the process of becoming fumes. Involved. Yeah. But yeah, the fumes, I had been. No. I wear a mask. And I do. And it isn't that. In fact, it's in spite of all that paraphernalia, all that physical
stuff. Yeah, but I think if we find the examples when all the preparation, all the attempt to prepare in the ascetic realm does not result in an ascetic experience, would bring back the parallelism here. How many times have you gone to an exhibit or talking formally about a work of art or works of art, museums,
yeah.
and not had what you could identify as an ascetic experience? Tons.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
More often
so we not. Had preparation. It was quiet. I went there expecting. I was kind of open, maybe. This begs questions of more definition, maybe, of what the aesthetic is, but at least there are times when all of that setting, the stage, was there and the experience didn't happen.
Oh, sure. Right? The Louvre. I wanted desperately to have one, and I didn't have one, and I walked outside
and had
one outside.
Yeah.
Really, it was a very frustrating thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, but aren't both the experiences, to use a word someone just mentioned, sent?
Aren't they sent?
They're both experiences are sent experiences.
Yeah, I suspect the main distinction, this might help you, the main distinction here is the aesthetic is totally sensory, whereas the religious is not.
Well, that's
totally
what
sensory.
I'm bummed up.
I don't understand.
I don't agree with that. I don't think you could separate it.
You can't separate what?
The spiritual and the aesthetic in the way you're trying to. It's like trying to separate a thought and a feeling. So for so many years, the psychiatrist tried to see man as in terms of his emotions. But you can't understand man in terms of his emotions, because his emotions are so related to his what's going on in him physically, what's going on in him spiritually, what's going on in him.
I'll buy your hesitation. On the other hand, in order to set, I from my own experience have to set up some kind of models, because I think it's a little sloppy feeling just all of a sudden I've had an experience and I want to find out what makes me tick and why I wept or why I chilled. I want to find out about that. I think that's one of the gifts God gave me, to have it and then to try to find out why I had it, and if I like it, let's do it again. And I have to try to separate, or else I'm going to walk around having nothing but ascetic and religious binges all the time, or trying to, without really finding out where they are.
I guess I'm not saying, I think it's important to identify, and I think it's important to be able to say, this is what I would identify as primarily an emotional experience, or as primarily a spiritual experience. But I think that you never have a completely emotional or a completely spiritual, even a completely physical experience.
Are you using the word emotional? In what sense? What's your definition of an emotional experience?
I'll turn to the aesthetic. You never complete the aesthetic, completely spiritual, or completely even physically experienced without...
Without what?
Without the others being involved. Mm.
I think I do. We'll have to find out. I'll have to find out how we can resolve it. But I think I do have an aesthetic experience separate from others.
Without any spiritual or physical?
Well, it's not physical. Not without physical, because it has to be sensory in the first place. I had to hear something, or smell, or taste, touch, feel, you know, some...
I think the physical and the reaction. But
no, the reaction is not the experience. That's what I thought you were saying when you talked about the emotions we have. My reaction is not the experience. It's the having, the getting.
But
maybe the problem is there really is no core that you can isolate from the $12 of gasoline spent. I mean, I'm not
no,
sure that you
can. No, I'll argue that
get
too.
To a core, I mean, I think that the whole thing probably participates in the experience in a significant way.
Well, you think the $12 is relevant to the aesthetic or the religious experience?
Well, I'm not sure of the $12, but anything further in the orange than that, it gets harder to separate.
Oh, but you created a new orange, Barbara.
Yeah. I think she was trying to say something about evaluating the two experiences, and I thought you were going to answer that somehow you... Did I hear you worrying that maybe one should be ranked more valuable than the other?
Well, thanks. I had something else I wanted to finish and didn't finish it. And that was that fits in there is where do you place these two experiences in our lives? Say the whole content of my life, and very little of that is taken up in. Let's take it on a vertical so I can take it as far as value. Very little of it is taken up in this experience, in having it. Yeah, I have all of this other part of my life.
Right, right.
And we have to talk about where that is in relation to the rest of our life in order for a discussion to be meaningful.
Why do you do it vertically?
Well, because I have some hesitancy on these two experiences. One being very essential for my being, the other one being more of a luxury for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, but I'm not sure where, you know, when we talk about experience, the experience in itself, neither of them are essential for my being in that the religious experience, I don't have to have the experience. I'm real hesitant on that. Hopefully, the sound or my security in my life with the Lord is not dependent on my religious experience or my feeling of that.
Your aesthetic experience.
And I think that's not true. But I think maybe it's because of the definition of religious experience that's come to you. I think if at least, you know, if we could take the orange, you know, I would like to think that it was not possible for you to do without that orange. But it's like the seeds, if the seed is at the center, you know, if that's the thing that out of which stuff grows, you don't just peel away the orange and then all the seeds drop out. I mean, you gotta pull them out. They're all really hooked up. And I think the meat of the religious experience, at least for me, involves things which are very physical and involves things which are very aesthetic. I mean, I think sloppy aesthetic, that probably isn't anything. I mean, if it's sloppy, it probably isn't any aesthetics at all. But for me, that'll screw up at getting having the religious be there. You know, of course, we tend to make religious, you know, set the arena for it. But I cannot imagine you, Nancy, without the religious experience, because it's like touching, you know, it's like affirming one another in such a variety. It's like setting a garland of flowers on a guy's head after he's been baptized. And
well, it's kind of hard to street.
That says a lot to me. That says
so anybody wants to run to the 5 o'clock dinner, please go.
If that says that it's not taking, that's it's not, you know, isolating that experience out of the rest of my life.
If you're talking religious and you're by that inferring at least Christian, God's religious experience with his people manifested itself in a manger.
And in our daily physical lives.
Absolutely.
Right. I need to think of that experience
being in those terms.
Yeah, I think it did, but I think I think it did. But at that time, I don't know now where I've left the pit or the seed, because your orange motif. Yeah. Because I think maybe in
could
there.
Could I ask you to verify one thing?
What?
Could I ask you to clarify one thing?
Sure.
I'll tell you something in my life, and I'm probably off the beaten track. What Rick said kind of made me wonder what was going on there. I went to bed one night, and I usually go right to sleep, so. All of a sudden, I was wide awake, and I looked at the drapes, and the streetlight shone through, and I got this big feeling saying that they were going to go back, and God was going to be there with his hand like Uncle Sam, says, I want you. And consequently, a couple days later, they called to want a Sunday school teacher. But anyway, I couldn't say no. But now, what kind of experience is that? It never happened, but I shaked and I cried. And there was no preparation beforehand. I mean, nothing that I did before, like eat pickles or whatever it is. And what caused that? Is that what you call a religious or a spiritual experience? Or is that what you call an emotional experience?
Is that what who calls? Why are you asking someone else?
Yeah, that's it.
Because I don't know the answer.
Well, I know. By definition. But if I had one of those jobbies, I sure wouldn't get on the phone and call my pastor. You know, I'd probably get on my knees and say, you know, what does this mean? And I want an answer to what this means, because once again, I mean, like he's talking about, it's a very private thing. It isn't something you can. What you just said, I don't believe. I mean, I accept what you said, except there's no way that I'm going to identify with what you just went through to the point where I would say that what you just had was aesthetics, it was not religious. You see? I mean, he just said, you can't convey that kind of thing.
If you go out, Rich, and look at the sunset behind the mountains, and all of a sudden, you're so filled with the wonder and awe of how beautiful it is, and how what a great creation it is. Is that a religious or an aesthetic experience?
Whose great creation?
I'd say it's neither, no matter what the answer. Excuse me, Rich. Yeah. I'd say it's neither, no matter what the... If you're filled with the wonder of it all, that's not the word. Your phrase, I want to hop on your particular phrase.
Well, that probably was not the right phrase to use.
No. What I'm saying is that your phrase indicated that you at that moment were reflecting. You weren't having that experience at all. You were reflecting upon it. In which case, I wouldn't call it either of these. I would call it a reflection. We use the word in a very simple mirroring.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, how about Carol's sermon last night?
Yes.
Bringing tears to your eyes. That would be an aesthetic?
Mm. Parts could, but I'd like to find out why. Tears come to my eyes sometimes with aesthetics. They also come with what I would identify as my personal religious experience. But the ascetic would have to have been separated in... It would not have occurred, for example, when Carol tripped going up to the podium. That could have brought tears to my eyes, too. But that would not have been aesthetic. Because why? Ooh, look at that beautiful form. A nice texture in his cloth as it ripped on the nail of the altar. Now, see, if that had been what I responded to, that was aesthetic.
Yeah.
But if I was worried about Carol tripping... or breaking the PA system, or these practical concerns, that had nothing to do with aesthetics. But it did have something to do with the experience I had at the moment. Does that help you? No. Your comment about the image, the screen, or your curtain and all, I think one of the things I thought you were going to say about not believing what you said is that it's quite possible that you did have preparation for that experience, but it was not a conscious preparation. I mean, you didn't have pickles. And I'm not a psychologist to delve into why the image, or even say that has to be the person to do it. I think we'd be unaware of the origin of the experience.
Well, would this be an attempt to just explain it away? You know?
Well, it would be on a part of the debunker will do this. I'll find out what your nerve rate is and your pulse rate and where you drove yesterday coming back from work. But that might not be the answer at all.
I think you're good.
good way to tell the difference, and it's the only difference I can think of. Aesthetic experiences are self-completing. Religious or spiritual experiences leave you with a sense of obligation, a wish to give back, a stronger wish to return love for love work. And aesthetic, I think, is a, you can hang on, and it can just belong to you always. And sacred things, your sense of obligation to teach or some other person. And in a sermon, if the sermon had been given in poetry or something, that could have been an aesthetic experience. If you cried for the beauty of the meter or the relationships of the words, but you didn't. You cried for the love and the sense of humanity that the spiritual request came. That's where it's about the only thing I can think of.
I'd debate that just a little bit by putting your the concern that you said was your religious. I put that on one of those slices.
Would you?
Yeah.
Pure.
Because somebody mentioned about last night's sermon. You were. Yeah. There was a point at which I got pretty choked up. And I tried to analyze it, and I couldn't find out that it was in a statement of the scripture or a manner of Carol's. So I just had the experience to let it go. And I identified that as not the aesthetic, but that little kernel that I had just for a moment. And I wasn't for that second, I wasn't concerned about giving or sharing or patting my wife or being of service. I wasn't, not for, all of a sudden I was just flushed.
Maybe just a shared emotion. I think...
Oh, it could be a sympathetic...
Very emotional parts of the sermon, and I felt I shared some of the emotion.
That could be an empathic kind of response.
The same as when I am in a railway station and I see people saying goodbye, I can come to the verge of tears just watching other people that I don't know at all saying goodbye to one another. But it's just sharing their space.
Or we call it sympathy.
You know, it's terrible walking in at the end of these
something
things.
Else. We'll talk about that if you like, excuse me, go ahead.
I never heard about your orange. But one thing that bewildered me, I was going to ask Nancy, she said, my relationship with God doesn't depend on my religious experience, and I thought she'd made a mistake, and she said, no. I thought she meant it's that.
Yes,
how can a person's relationship to God not depend on her religious experience? Because to me, that's what it is. Your relationship to God is your experience of God.
She doesn't need to repeat those. She's so secure.
No.
I feel that with aesthetics, you want to do it over, but with religious experience, hers is so secure. Now, she doesn't need to...
I'd want to do my religious experience over and over again.
Yeah, but she doesn't need to have peak experiences. I think I heard her saying that, and just from talking to her yesterday for a moment, I had that sense of her stability and her sense
of... But if you stopped having... religious experiences, at least the way I understand words, you'd stop having a relationship to God. To me, every day, every time I think of God or think of my life in terms of God, which sometimes isn't very often, but if I didn't think of God, if I didn't have that, quote, religious experience, I wouldn't have a relationship. That, to me, that's what it is.
Yeah, I think we...
I think
we have to ask Nancy what she meant at that point. I too thought she made a mistake, but she obviously did not, but she didn't have time to...
Could be just a difference in her understanding of the term.
Of words.
What it is.
That might be again, too. Yeah.
You know, I wonder if I understand what you were saying. When I think back on aesthetics, I remember I was very interested in church as a little boy because it was an orderly thing and because there was music. Mm-hmm. Because everything was symmetrical. You know, there were pews on this side and pews on that side. And there was an altar in the front. And everything was in its place, and there was order to it. And I don't think I was religious. I don't think I had a faith when I liked church as a little boy and as a young man. I really liked it. It was predictable. It was pretty. It was nice. You know, there was a nice picture up in the front. There was stained glass. And not really pretty. It was all very... regular and ordered. And, you know, everything else during the week was kind of chaotic, and I had two older brothers that used to give me a hard time, and I used to just love to
comfortable.
Sit there for an hour and enjoy the order.
Of course, that's an argument for maintaining traditional liturgies forever and ever because of the comfort we derived.
And the aesthetics of it were beautiful. And as I got older, I got more and more critical. And I belonged to the old ELC, where instead of having acolytes, some guy would come up and light a match on the seat of his pants and light the candle. And there was always some well-intending old guy who would come in just before the service. He'd never do it except with the full church. Just destroyed the aesthetics of the experience.
I would agree. I don't think that it's necessarily religious.
I'm talking about completely non-religious things. But I still went to church for the order. And I think if it hadn't been for the aesthetics, and that's what I would call aesthetics, was the order and the whatever beauty there was in it. I came to religion. And to me, they are completely separate things.
You're about in my position. I would agree. I have arguments that I had to try to keep them separate, but at core, but I consider them to be separate too.
And to me, the I'm always suspicious of responding to beautiful music. I love it. I think it should be part of the service.
Why are you suspicious of responding?
Because I think it's an emotion in me that isn't religious in church.
You've got other emotions. You've got love, hate, fear, anger, hunger.
Mm-hmm.
All these.
So, are you saying, like, why do you go to choir practice? Because you just enjoy the music, or because you want to praise the Lord?
I would say both of them are beautiful. Changing the word beautiful for each one. Let me read something for about 10 minutes, and I'm not going to define our terms, except some of the definition will come out in what I'm about to read. And then after about 10 minutes of reading, let's discuss it. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Will you do something simple for me? Tell me who you are.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm Dale Hayworth. I teach art history at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota.
Thank you.
And who are you?
Arnie Walker, St. Charles, Illinois.
St. Charles. Where's St. Charles?
40 miles west of Chicago. Yeah, hello.
Yeah.
Hi.
We are
not. Okay. Are you ready? Fall in. Some of this would have been changed had I heard the last conference before this and something that was said this morning by Erling in his session. I got a footnote in here, and it ought to be expanded. So this gives you the idea of the state of what you're about to hear. I'm a historian of art. I spent almost all my life, my professional life anyway, studying works of art. And similarly, I've been involved one way or another with what I identify as my religious life. Therefore, the problem or the possibility of discussing a problem or identifying a problem of a relationship between these two facets in my own life, the religious and the artistic or the aesthetic, maybe we can refine the term later, is a natural one for me. But we can narrow it down even a little bit more. Perhaps for the last 300 years or so, art in the Western world, with which I'm more familiar, has been very strongly dominated by Christian images. So that to ask the question, as I do of myself, of a Christian, what is the relationship between any religious experience I might have, however we define it, and an ascetic experience, however we define it, becomes for me then a pretty important personal question. Now, we're all involved with some elements of the artistic every day. Sitting here and looking at John's screen around the fire, or the texture of the wall, or the fabric that's hanging on the wall back there, or the degree or the condition or the quality of the light that's coming streaming in here, or the sound of my voice. All of us are tremendously aware, sensorily, of our surroundings all the time. we can't escape from being bombarded aesthetically, touched in some artistic way. You just can't do it. You can't walk from here to the dining hall when the bell rings in about 40 minutes or 45 and not be somehow or other touched by an aesthetic awareness. Also every day, I suspect we're all involved with some experience of the religious dimension. An active participation simply in being alive in God's world would seem to me that make us aware of our friends and ourselves and Him. And I believe we can discover some relationship now between these two areas of experience, the aesthetic and the religious. And maybe we hope that this discovery will lead to an enlarging of our understanding of the valuable elements that are found in each of the separate experiences. Now, my understanding of the aesthetic and the religious experiences, there's some remarkable similarities between the elements with which they're put together. So in the remainder of these few pages, and then in the discussion to follow, I hope we can identify some of these similarities, primarily in an attempt to illuminate them, because from my own background, as I mentioned in the introductory sentence, I find these perhaps the two most profound parts of my life. Let me give a brief description of the two experiences, working description, which we can cavil about or debate later. I see the total religious experience or event